The world is moving at an ever-increasing pace, yet leaders are becoming more and more bogged down by everything which they're expected to achieve. Sometimes the best strategy is not actually learn how to speed up, rather, learn how and when to slow down. Today, my guest Liz and I discuss what it truly means to slow down in order to speed up, why racing to results isn't effective, when and how leaders should take a break, how leaders can in place barriers from work, and so much more. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Moving Forward Leadership Podcast, episode 99, Slow Down to Speed Up, Liz Bywater. Welcome one, welcome all to the Moving Forward Leadership Podcast. It's your Chief Leadership Officer, Scott McCarthy. Before we dive into the episode, I just wanted to throw something out there. How's your New Year's resolution doing? Have you shook off that hungover yet and decided what you're actually going to achieve this year? Maybe you should think about the Power Goals program. If you want something different this year, then maybe this is the time, right? Maybe this is time to try something different because in the past, you just haven't succeeded, have you? I bet. Maybe you have, but if you haven't, then come and check it out. Go to movingforwardleadership.com/power to learn all about the Power Goals program, why it's different, and most importantly, why you're going to see results. And hell, if you got questions, drop me a line. I'm more than happy to answer them for you. But if you want to crush some goals this year, then maybe it's time to try something different. All right. And today's episode actually may help you with that. It's all about slowing down to speed up. The concept of the world today is that we need to hustle, we need to grind, we need to do more. And it's just burning people out. People are getting burnt out, they're not becoming effective, and reality is they're becoming ineffective. And this is what Liz is here talking about. She's working at the intersection of business and psychology. She integrates expertise in human behavior and organizational dynamics to basically help her executive clients thrive in the increasingly complex world. She works with top executives, management teams across all kinds of companies like Johnson & Johnson, Nike, Boeing, etc. Okay, so you know she knows what she's talking about. So today we talk about why it's important for this slowdown in order to speed up. All right, folks, you're going to enjoy this episode. So sit back, relax, enjoy my discussion with Liz Bywater, talking about why it's important to slow down, to speed up. Liz, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Scott. I'm really, really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're just talking in the preamble before I hit record, and the listener is listening to this on New Year's Day. That's pretty wild.
That is fantastic. It's very cool.
And it's a super cool topic to have on New Year's Day with 2020 now, and basically the world that we're in, and that your whole premise is that we need to slow down so that we can speed up and be more effective. So I think it's awesome, awesome way to kick off 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I'll tell you what, this is the thing I talk to my clients about all the time in the months leading up to the new year and just after the new year, is all about lighting yourself up, getting yourself ready to really hit the ground running as you get into a whole new opportunity, a whole new set of opportunities to be successful.
Great. So let's dive in. Let's not hold the listener any longer. So my first question is, what does it actually truly mean to slow down in order to speed up?
Well, I'll tell you what, you may experience this. I know I do, and my clients do all the time. I work with executives in the Fortune 500. I work with business owners and various professionals. And, all of us are living incredibly busy lives where there are demands that, come at us all the time. There are, there are always more things to do than time in which to do it. And sometimes we find ourselves sort of scrambling, right? Scrambling to do the right things, scrambling to tick things off our to-do list, scrambling to be effective and good leaders and all of the things that are really important to thrive in this very busy world. And slowing down to speed up is about taking a different approach, being a little bit more deliberate and thoughtful and mindful about the way we approach the work that we're doing, about the way we interact with other people who work with us, for us, around us, and just not running from activity to activity, but really lining up the approach, the resources, and kind of the frame of mind to be especially successful as you move forward.
No, I really like that. And I like that whole ideology, because I feel like we are just rushing from one place to another. But you know, it's kind of like a car in mud is just spinning tires. You're going, the RPMs are high, the tires are spinning, but you're going really nowhere.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, and that's really the analogy that I use in my book, Slow Down to Speed Up, is this analogy of, you know, we want to get to the finish line. We have things, we have goals, we want to get things accomplished. And the problem is, by going faster and faster, there are a lot of problems that come along the way with that, right? For everything from, you know, you can burn out, or the people who are working with you, collaborating with you, can get overwhelmed, exhausted. We start making mistakes. And so really, to think about that metaphor of, you know, you can get in the fastest car in the world, but if you haven't taken the time to make sure that it's running well, and you have, you know, to stretch the metaphor, that you have the right people in the pit to help you, you know, be prepared and to get things done right. You know, there are a lot of problems that can come with that. So we just can't keep going faster, faster, faster all the time. It's really not the way to be most impactful and to get the best outcomes.
So with that, the first chapter, you discuss racing to results.
Yes.
I would definitely like to hear what you mean by racing to results, because, you know, isn't getting the job done quicker, you know, quote unquote, more efficient, more effective, because you race to the end line?
Well, listen, it really depends on what the job is. And more I've been speaking to my clients about knowing, you know, where are the places where you can and need to go really fast? There are times where you have to get a job done quickly, where you have to get your vision communicated rapidly to the right people, where you have to respond to customer issues, you know, where you have to get your team together quickly. But you can't go fast in every area all the time. There's not enough time in the day. You know, we run out of energy after a while. I mean, every one of us, right? Business is just people trying to get things done, you know, together. And so if you race to get the right result, you might be successful some of the time. You will be successful some of the time. But when you take the time to make sure that, one, everything you're doing is feeding into the result that you're trying to get and not a distraction from that result, and that you do have everything lined up properly and most effectively, you know, if you're not slowing down to do that, you're going to go off course. You're going to get overwhelmed with the busy factor. You may not have communicated well enough with the people around you to get the support and kind of collaborative effort that you need. So, yeah, we want to get things done fast at times. But the interesting thing is, if you just take a small enough time, you know, what I call a strategic pause. It could be 15 minutes, you know, every morning. It could be a half an hour or a couple of hours on a Friday afternoon. And with teams, I like to say, you know, get your team together once a week, get them together for a day every couple of months, get them together for a couple of days, you know, every year. All of those things really help you be prepared to get the right things done quickly, impactfully, with fewer mistakes, less stress, and more sustainability.
Yeah, I like what you're saying there, especially with just taking that strategic pause. And by day, I'm actually a Canadian Army officer. So in pre-deployment training, before I deployed to Afghanistan, we discussed incident management. So if something bad happens, how do you deal with the situation? And we were just discussing what we refer to as the Condor moment. And I've talked about this on length, and it's exactly that. It's taking that pause for, whether that's a second, 5 minutes, maybe in the situation, it could be hours or a day, but still taking that pause so that you can actually reflect on what's actually just happened, what's going on, and what you're going to do about it, so that you can do it better without making so many mistakes.
Well, exactly. You know, listen, it's a great, great analogy. You know, it applies, you know, clearly in a military situation, and I think has applications in the business world and for civic leadership and all of that. You know, in a military situation, you know this far better than I do, but you do have to be able to make split second decisions, right? The stakes are very high. You might be in a combat situation. But you know, the way to do that, and I'm completely preaching to the choir, so tell me if you think I have this right, but to your point, if you haven't prepared so that when you're in that high pressure, high stakes moment, you know, if you haven't thought every scenario through, if you haven't talked to the people around you about how things are going to get done well in that high pressure moment, it becomes very difficult or impossible, especially when adrenaline's running and there's, you know, their lives at stake, right? It's a really good analogy for why slowing down is so important.
That's great. And a good part of that is that you hit on is, you know, why racing to results is actually ineffective.
Yeah, exactly right. And it is important to be mindful of it. You know, we really do live in a culture where we are constantly being told to go faster, where we are being given enormous amounts of information to absorb all the time, you know, between, you know, newsfeed notifications that come through on our phones and just a rapid news cycle. And, you know, there's always something to be dealing with. It can be very easy to feel like you are just racing all the time, but to have the mentality that slowing down really is the way to get things done better, faster, and with fewer mistakes, I think that's really helpful for the individual business person and certainly for the leader who has a team of individuals he or she is, you know, is working with and you know, customers who need rapid response but not haphazard response. I think that's kind of what we're talking about too. There's a difference between going quickly and going so quickly that it is haphazard, frenetic, or simply not effective.
Yes. So as well, I often discuss not rushing to failure. And that's basically what you're talking about there, right? Is that you're basically rushing so fast to get the job done that you're actually doing it wrong. And when you hit the line, you end up. And I used to always say to my subordinate officers when I was commanding 200 soldiers, I would say, all right, guys, let's not rush to failure on this one. Let's take our time. Let's figure out what all the actual factors are and then make a plan to move forward. Because you know what? Sometimes you do have the time or sometimes you don't. But it's important to get it done, but also to get it done right and not go in the complete wrong line.
Absolutely. And you know, without fail, if things are done too quickly and they lead to mistakes, fixing those mistakes takes so much more time, effort, energy, sort of, you know, emotional capacity, relationship bandwidth, all of that. It takes so much more time than if you just take enough time to get yourself ready to do it right the first time around.
So I can hear my listener right now. They're probably thinking, got it, guys. I need to take breaks. I understand my team needs to take breaks, but how am I going to do that? When am I going to do that? Our schedule is jam-packed. So what's your thoughts there? How and when can leaders take a break and slow down?
The key, I would say, is not to wait for there to be a break in your schedule because, you know, as you're saying, the breaks don't exist. If you're working in a company, a lot of my clients are in reasonably large companies, some in very large companies, and, you know, there's sort of this death by meeting mentality, right? There's, you know, their schedules are so full with meetings, and some meetings are valuable, and many of them are something of a waste of time, right? They could be shorter, they could be more strategic, they could be more targeted. But unless there is a deliberate and you know, really disciplined effort to protect time, the time won't simply show itself to you. So one of the things that I tell my clients is to open up your calendar and pick times every day, literally every day, where you are building in your strategic pause. And again, that might be a 15-minute spot, you know, in between meetings. That might be ensuring that you've given yourself a full 30 to 60-minute lunch, that you're not simply working through lunch or on a call every time you get into the car, but blocking out time that is undistracted, that is set aside for anything from working on a key project to having a conversation with an important colleague or stakeholder to simply getting your mindset in the right place so that when you do show up for an important meeting or conversation, you are prepared and poised and you have clarity around what it is that you want to accomplish. You know, those are the things that you really will find tremendous benefit from. So the first part is just protect your time. And the second part of it is knowing that it's not a waste of time and it's not an indulgence to build in some time every day, a little bit more time, you know, once a week, even a little bit longer time on a monthly and quarterly and annual basis. So the longer period of time that we're talking about, week, month, quarter, year, the longer period of strategic pause you should be building in because you need time. You need to look at not only ahead of the day and the week, but what's coming this quarter, what's coming over the next year. The more senior you are, probably the further out you're looking. So that's why you need to build a significant chunk of time into your calendar that no one can claim or take away from you, where you are seeing the future, you're creating the future, and you're conveying to the people around you, how are we all going to work together to achieve something amazing?
It's all about owning the calendar, not letting the calendar own you, right?
That's for sure. That's for sure. And, you know, if you happen to have an assistant of some sort, an executive assistant, an administrative assistant, it is really good to engage that individual in owning the calendar as well. So I have executives who are my clients who are, you know, extremely busy, like all of us, and, you know, have really hundreds of emails that they are getting backed up on every day in their inbox and, you know, again, tons of meetings. So I say, don't worry about your calendar. Let your assistant, who is really an expert at this, and of course you have to make sure you have a really terrific assistant working with you, have him or her be the protector. Have them guard your time and let them know, hey, when I have a strategic pause built into my calendar or, you know, I want you to build that in, unless it's urgent, unless it's, you know, somebody from the board or, you know, a key investor or somebody from the FDA, that time cannot be taken away. That is truly essential for your own personal success, for the organization's success moving forward.
Yeah. Blocking those times in the calendar are super crucial. And I can give an example of why or how I used it in the past. Everybody when I was commanding knew no meetings before 9 a.m. No meetings until 1:30 in the afternoon, and don't come looking for me at lunchtime. It was as simple as that. No meetings before 9 because, well, being in a military unit, we have a high priority on physical fitness. So morning time is PT time. So I want to make sure my people were getting it in. My PT time, it was actually during my lunch hour because I would take that as a break. So don't come looking for me at lunchtime. And then nothing before 1:30 because you know what? People do things at lunch. They go out. They go out and they go have lunch with a friend or they have meeting or whatever. So like, you know what? No meetings before 1:30 in the afternoon so that people can get back from their lunch, get prepared for it, and then actually show it up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a really good example. And it not only does that help ensure your own productivity, you know, keep your energy high, you can be more creative, you can make better decisions, all of that. It also is a very good example for the people who are looking to you as a leader, who are going to follow your example. So, you know, I've seen places where this is not done effectively, and I have executives, just for example, who don't really build in for themselves time, let's say after work hours, that, okay, it's after work, barring a true emergency, I won't be reachable after a certain hour, I'll get back to you in the morning. You know, they're not great at that because there is this sense of so much to do and we need to get results fast. But the problem is everyone else around them gets caught up in that, you know? So if the boss might say, hey, listen, when you go home, that's your own personal time. But if you're getting an email from your leader at 8 p.m. or 10 p.m. or, you know, 4 in the morning, you're probably going to feel like you have to respond to that and that you have to act in kind. So as a leader, to be setting the example for everyone around you of a balance and taking those pauses and slowing down in the appropriate ways and having some sort of delineation between personal time and work time. When you do that, I think everyone gets better. People are more excited about the work. People are much less prone to illness and burnout and stress and overwhelm and all the things that get in the way of being really effective.
Yeah, the connected world definitely is kind of merge that whole work-life divide, right? Because people are now really accessible 24/7. If when you want them to be or two, they allow themselves to be. So how do we actually make some barriers? I don't recall if you go into that in your book or not, but you know, how can we go and make some barriers here so that people can, you know, take the time when they go home with their families, which is important, to sit there and have dinner with their spouse, their kids, or you know, watch a TV show as they eat dinner alone if they're single. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm married with two boys, so I don't have that luxury anymore.
Yeah, you've lost that for the foreseeable future, I'm afraid. this is all really important stuff to talk about, because yes, whether somebody is single and wants time to decompress, you know, by him or herself, or meet with friends, or get together with family, or any of that, or has, you know, children at home and has all the demands of kind of a more hectic home life. For all of us, the time to decompress and take care of ourselves and stop thinking actively about work. And by the way, as a side note, even when we're not thinking actively about things, you know, our mind is working on problems and solutions in the background. Not to go off too much off topic, but you know, there is a phenomenon called the Eureka effect, where I forget exactly where it comes from, but the Eureka effect is this sense that when you stop actively working on a problem, and maybe you know you lay down and take a nap, or you hop in the bath, and all of a sudden the solution comes to you. It's like, oh, Eureka, I've come up with it, right? But it was really that stepping away from it and slowing down that allowed the solution to kind of come to the forefront without distraction. So your brain continues to do the work. So, you know, you asked how do you start making this happen? I think part of it is really about having proactive, upfront conversations with important people in your life. And that might be the people who work with you. That might be your boss. That might be the board of directors. But have some, and your customers, by the way, as well, have some proactive conversations about when and how to reach you, what constitutes an emergency, in which case they have kind of, you know, the proverbial bat phone where they can get to you if they absolutely must. But, you know, set those boundaries. People will actually, for the most part, appreciate it if you present it in a way that said it doesn't appear self-indulgent or unprofessional, but simply, hey, listen, this is the way I am going to serve you best. This is the way I am going to do the best work, by taking some time that I'm 100% here and available for you, and periods of time where I am reachable really only when it's a true emergency. And by the way, I'm back, you know, I'm back online, I'm back available by whatever the time might be, 7 a.m., 8 a.m., 9 a.m. When you have those great discussions ahead of time, it becomes much easier to implement. And it also becomes easier to correct if people are not respecting those boundaries. So it's very much about communication, putting whatever boundary it is that you're setting out there in the other person's best interest. Those things really are pretty effective. They take some time, especially if you work in a culture where that's not typically done. But particularly if you're in a leadership position, you're really in a great spot to have those conversations and to create a culture in which people, when they're working, they are spot on working. They are doing their job. Their full energy and attention are there. And when they're not working, it's okay. They're not working.
Love it. And I could definitely back you up on that whole thing about the leader creating the culture for it, because I can tell you, I told my people that when I got home at the end of the day, my work phone went on the counter, and the only way you're going to get a hold of me, is if you called me. It was emergencies were phone calls.
Yes.
Not emails, phone calls. I would potentially check my email during evening time, but I would tell them, like, if I reply to you in the evening, that's just because I'm sitting back and for whatever reason, I decided to pick up my work phone and check my email and reply to me. That does not indicate that you actually have to reply. Pick up yours and do the exact same thing. I'm just taking 5-10 minutes out of my personal time to keep on to the top of things for the next day. It does not mean that is not permission for me to eat into your personal time. And I think if you, as the leader, you're at the top of that organization, you create that culture, people will respect you for it. And I also think you add money to the bank for those times when you're like, I need you to work late, or I need you to go harder on this. And they'll be like, you know what? You've given me the space on the other end. Then yeah, I'll give it to you on this end.
Well, that's exactly right. It's sort of a, you know, there's a kind of quid pro quo there, you know, and you know, there's a concept called the psychological contract, where basically in effect, the organization has shown the employees working for an organization, you know what, we've got your back. We are going to protect you. We're going to treat you with respect. We're going to give you a sense of where you fit, you know, what your role is within the organization. And we're not going to create undue strain, stress on your health, wellness, you know, family life, et cetera. We're going to take care of all that. And then the employee on the flip side says, you know what, my part of the contract is I'm going to give you my best. I'm going to be excited about work. I'm going to be creative. I'm going to, at times, as you're saying, put in more, you know, to give you more hours. I'm going to work a little later when we're really at crunch time, because we all know sometimes there are crunch times. We want to make sure that we're not running around all the time, you know, with our hair on fire. You don't want to work in a culture where everything is about putting out fires. But as a leader, you're very much in a great position to set that culture.
I want to change gears a little bit right now, and I'd like to discuss a topic which I'm a big fan of, and that's reflection. So in your book, you discuss pivot points and reflection, looking in the rearview mirror. So I have my thoughts on the whole subject, but I definitely want to get yours, as you're the expert. You're the doctor in the field with the book. I am fortunately just a low-level podcaster. So what are your thoughts and tips out there for the leader on this point?
So, Scott, there are a few ways to approach the whole process of reflection. And reflection very much goes hand in hand with this idea of a strategic pause, by the way. So one of the things you can do with your blocked out time is reflecting on a whole variety of things. And you won't do them all every day, and that's fine. You don't need to do that. But reflection can be everything from taking time to really think through a business challenge, an opportunity, a potential new direction, reflecting on, you know, what really is the opportunity here? What are the potential obstacles that might get in our way? What are the successes we've had in the past that we can leverage, that we can replicate in some way? I do find often organizations are going so quickly that what they're missing is really taking a look at where things went, have gone wrong in the past. And by not looking at that, by not reflecting on those pivotal failures and losses, what happens is those mistakes get repeated in different ways and in different magnitudes, sometimes in very great magnitudes, and it's very expensive in many ways. And they're also not slowing down long enough to say, hey, let's reflect on what's gone well. You know, what have we done well as a team? What are we doing well as a company? Where is the industry going? What are the really great things we can take advantage of that we can, you know, how do we build on the successes of the past? So by taking a pause, this can be done individually. It can be done, you know, in informal conversation with important peers, colleagues, customers, et cetera. And certainly should be done as a team on a regular basis. By doing all of that, what you're really doing is you're allowing yourself to mitigate the risk of making the same mistakes over and over. And you are really setting yourselves up to be more successful, more rapidly, more consistently over the course of time.
Yeah, that's great. And that basically follows a very standard military format as well. And we call it the after action review. So whenever we go through something, we basically boil it down, right? When you go, all right, what went well? What went wrong? Why did it go well? Why did it go wrong? How can we fix it for next time? How can we mitigate things that we can't control so that it goes as close as we can get to perfect the next time we have to go through this, or something similar, because you never go through the same thing twice, right?
That's right. Every new situation is going to have nuances, some small and some will be some pretty significant differences. And yet at the same time, there are going to be commonalities. And what by taking the time to really identify those, identify the risks of things, you know, going awry once again, identifying the opportunities where you can build on what's going well, all of that is time extremely well spent. And unfortunately, really does get overlooked when one is going too fast, or when a company is going too fast, or where there's too much pressure to just keep moving, just keep moving. We don't have time to slow down and look at what the past, to look in that rearview mirror. You have to look in the rearview mirror. Otherwise, you end up kind of spinning your wheels.
Mm-hmm. And I would even suggest, that we're talking basically at organizational level here. I would even suggest you need to do that as personal level. Like as most leaders, I'm a big goal setter. I'm such a big goal setter. I developed a program for the listeners out there, the Power Goals program. Check it out if it's the first time hearing it. Where I do weekly reflection, where I look back on my week and I'm like, all right, all these actions that I have lined up to help me achieve my goals, how have I been doing? And I track them on a daily basis with an app I use on my phone. And I'm like, okay, I failed here this day for this thing and this day for that thing. Why did I fail at those things? Oh, for this reason, that reason, the other thing. Okay, how can I mitigate that for this upcoming week? And then I end up planning my week out that way.
I think that's fantastic. And I agree with you. I think it can be done, individually, should be done individually as well as on a team and organizational level. And it can be done for business goals as well as personal goals. There's no true work-life separation, right? We all are who we are. And right. To take the time to make sure that you're thinking about what's going well and what you've done really effectively, both in your work and personal life, and also to your point, you reflect on a consistent basis, on a daily basis, on what can I do to be even more effective today? What are the challenges that are going to come my way? How do I stay poised and make great decisions and make sure that I'm being professional and respectful and thoughtful towards the people around me? All of that stuff is just going to accelerate your progress, make you feel more successful, make you be more successful, and also helps life be kind of happier and more rewarding.
Absolutely. So we've just been talking about all about the things that are great for slowing down, but we can't just slow down. There's the other side of this book and of this equation too. We're like, all right, great. You've told me how to slow down. I've slowed down, but the point isn't to slow down. It's to speed up. So how do leaders go about speeding up once they've actually slowed down?
Yeah, so absolutely, you're absolutely right. It's not just about slowing down. I've said in the book, and I say this sometimes to my clients, slowing down is not about, kicking up your feet and feeling lazy and complacent. I mean, complacency does become the enemy to growth and progress and success. So once you have taken the time, and again, I don't want to make it binary. It is something that's an ongoing process, but to slow down, and to think and to line up resources and all of that, then you really do want to hit the ground running. And, I think one of the first keys is to make sure that you're very clear on what it is you're trying to achieve. What are your top 1, 2, 3 goals, whether it's for the quarter, the year, or even looking forward, a couple of years out? And by knowing where you're heading, then you can really get clarity around what your priorities are. Because I don't know anybody who doesn't have either a literal or, in their mind, to-do list, right? A very large list. I have 84 things I can do today. Probably will have time to get to 10 of them at best, and maybe 3 of them I can do really well. When you're laser focused on what's most important, what you have to do first, what you have to do best, where you have to focus your time, effort, and energy, when you keep all of that in the forefront because it's going to get you more quickly to your goals, you're going to be much, much more effective. And in the book, I do have some tools for getting clarity on what those priorities are. I've worked with executives in very large companies who will tell me, Liz, it's overwhelming because my sense is that everything's a priority. And let me show you all the initiatives we're working on and all the projects that have to get, on which we have to make some real progress. And when that happens, I say, okay, so here's, just slow down for a minute. Here's where you have to have conversations with the people who work with you, for you, for whom you work. Get some alignment on what really is most important now. What has to happen today, this week, this month? And I actually have them go through an activity called Now, Later, Never. So the now stuff is generally your priority. It's most urgent. It's most important. It will have greatest impact. Then you have stuff that goes in your next column, which is later. So this is still important stuff. It's good stuff, but maybe it's not quite as time sensitive. Maybe it won't have immediate impact. It's stuff that can get pushed off a little bit. And then the hardest thing for almost everybody I work with is the never list. And or you could also call it the no list, the things that you're simply going to start saying no to. The never list are the things that might seem interesting, that people might be asking you for, that you know you've had in the back of your mind, but they are either a distraction, they may be a distraction, they're simply taking up your time and energy, or they're just not really lined up with those priorities and those key goals. The never stuff has to just go on a list and get put in a drawer, and you have to let go of those things, because if you don't, there's just not enough time and energy to get the really important things done.
I absolutely love this section of the book. I certainly just ate it all up because it truly speaks to me and how I think and how I operate. And prioritization is just so crucial because you can't do everything. You just can't do it all. So you have to take care of the things that are most important, right? And you can't get bogged down by these never things because they'll just eat your time up constantly and you'll never actually get anywhere because you're not taking care of your priorities.
That's exactly right. And you know, it's really, you know, just to make this point, you know, there's no blame here, right? None of us is
right
at fault for having too much on the list. It's the world we live in. But we do have a personal responsibility and an accountability to the people around us to put things on that never list and to enforce it and to allow the people who work with us and for us to put things on the never list and to enforce that. It's very easy for those things to creep back up onto the to-do list or for new things that really should be never to creep onto the list. And you have to be disciplined about, you know, ferreting those things out, putting them away and saying, yeah, that might've been interesting. It's just, they can't happen because there are too many more important things that have to be done.
For sure. When I was reading through the book, like obviously the first half talks about slowing down and then you go into the first chapter speeding up and you're like taking control. You know, that's what it's all about, taking control, prioritization. And then next thing you go back into, one would even think of like slowing back down again, but it's not, is it? It's about keeping actually the speed up by taking those little periods of relaxation, or not necessarily relaxation, but just taking it down a notch so that you can get back up again, recharging your batteries and going back up again. So can you go into a little bit more detail on that and your aspects of how leaders can stay at their peak by taking those little dips every now and then?
Yes, I sure can. And, you know, I recently saw the movie Ford versus Ferrari. I don't know if you've seen it, but you know, the main scene, and it's a very long scene in the movie, is a scene about the Le Mans race. I think it was 1964 or somewhere in there. And, you know, these cars are going very, very fast. And they are going for 24 hours. These drivers, I think there are two driver teams and they trade off for 24 hours. And these cars are amazing machines, right? They're designed to go 200 miles an hour for 24 hours. But not without stops, not without pit stops. So periodically, the drivers have to pull over so that the tires can get swapped and the cars can get gassed up and the engines can cool off a little bit. And after a number of hours, the drivers have to come and eat something and rest and give somebody else the wheel, you know. It's really very much like what we all have to do and what leaders and companies have to do and what business owners have to do. If you're not stopping periodically for that pit stop where you are taking care of yourself personally, you're having lunch, you're doing some exercise, you're spending time with people that are meaningful to you, etc. If you're not doing those things, well, you're not going to stay well, right? You're going to get sick ultimately. It doesn't matter how fit or young or healthy or all of that you are. Eventually, it will take a toll, or at the very least, you're energy will start to lag or your decisions will start to suffer or your relationships will start to suffer. And ultimately, if we don't have good relationships, we really can't be all that effective. So the slowing down or the sort of pit stop or strategic pause is something that needs to be incorporated even when you're in the midst of going fast, even when you're driving to have the best quarter you've ever had, even when you're putting together that, you know, that rock star town hall or board presentation or, you know, whatever it might be. You just can't go 100 miles, 200 miles an hour all the time. So, you know, again, it's about controlling your calendar, It's about saying no at times. It's about figuring out what are the things that you personally don't have to do. So one of the activities that I help my clients with is me, not me. And if it's not me, then who is it? So if you've got an idea of something that you want to be in charge of or someone has asked you to implement, you know, your job as an effective leader is to say, okay, great. Is this something that I, at my particular level in my role in this organization, must have ownership of and must actively be involved in running? If so, okay, that's a reasonable decision. That's where you, you know, that's where you go fast. Is it perhaps something that is better suited to somebody on my team or a neighboring team or another colleague who either has more time, more experience, needs the development opportunity, or simply, you know, it better suited to the work? Well, then that's a not me, right? So there's the me, there's the not me, and then there's identifying, you know, who might be a better fit. So when you do that again, you're allowing yourself a bit of a slowdown because you're not doing that 200 mile an hour lap all the time. You are protecting your time again for the strategic, high priority items. You're also giving other people an opportunity to hop onto things that they might not have had a chance to do if you, as this, you know, great achieving, super competent leader, are doing all the time and not letting go of.
I absolutely, as a gearhead, I absolutely love that analogy of the Le Mans race. Unfortunately, I've yet to see the movie. Hopefully, by the time this podcast episode gets put out, I will have seen it, but unfortunately time is very tight for me, seeing I have two young boys, plus I'm currently doing a master's program, so I'm just a glutton for punishment and time's non-existent. But I would definitely want to see it. It's on my list to see one day, but the analogy still holds true that you need to, in order to go faster, you need to take that moment, you know, going for that pit stop, get your tire swapped, get your gas tank refilled, and head back out, right? And that's basically what I did when we're talking about owning your calendar near the beginning of this podcast. That's basically what I was doing during my lunchtime. That was my time to get recharged, take a break away from the work, get my exercise in to take care of myself, come back, and then refocus at what was happening.
Yeah, I think it's great that you do that. I think it's important that we all do that. And that, you know, again, we're sort of in a time where, you know, we're getting mixed messages, you know, in some ways we're being told, make sure you are sleeping well, eating well, getting your exercise, doing your yoga, meditating, and all of those things that take time. And, you know, and then on the other side of it, we're being told, well, you know, hey, if you sleep 4 hours a night, more power to you, you know, like who needs sleep? Who needs to stop to eat? Just keep going. It's a bit of a mixed message. Ultimately, I think there's a balance to be struck. And it's also back to this idea of what are the times where you have to put in a little more time, a little more effort, a little more energy because there is a true push. And you want to go as fast as you can. And sometimes you have to do that, but it's simply not sustainable all the time. We really have to build in those slow down periods. And we're all so much more effective when we've had a little bit of a time where we've said no, given something to somebody else, or simply set those boundaries around, you know, I'm not available from, you know, and I'll make it up, but let's say 6 p.m. until 8 a.m. the following morning. As soon as I get in the office, let's sit down together and we'll figure out our path forward.
Yeah, that's great. Absolutely. So the last section I want to discuss from your book is your Accelerating Success Action Plan. So for the listener out there who's unfortunately not read this book yet, although I'm sure they're going to be hitting the show notes later to grab a copy, what is this action plan? And what does it entail? Most importantly, what am I going to get from it at the end?
So the Accelerating Success Action Plan, or ASAP for short, is my template for getting down on paper very simply and clearly what is it that you're trying to accomplish. And for all of my clients, even people who are, you know, in very senior roles, who are senior executives, who are CEOs, who are board members, you know, pare it down to three key goals. Doesn't mean you're only doing three things, but three most important goals. Get those down on your action plan. Get those down under, you know, in these very targeted buckets. And then for each of these goals, get very specific about what are the priority actions that you have to take to get there fast, effectively, sustainably, and without making the kinds of mistakes that really become a drain and very difficult to remedy. So, you know, you're going to put down your goals. You're going to write the key actions that will get you there. You want to think about, and this is all on this template of the action plan, the Accelerating Success Action Plan, what are the resources you need? So do you need money? Do you need investment on the part of your board, of the organization? If you're running your own business, do you need, you know, do you need more funds to work with? Do you need the help of certain people? Who are the people that you need to approach? How are you going to ensure that you've got support and their time and their creativity and their commitment? What are the resources you personally need to get the work done well? So goals, actions, resources, and then, you know, how will you know that you are meeting with success? What are your metrics? You know, and you can think about what are the ways that I'll know I'm reasonably satisfied. Yep, I've done a good enough job. I'm content. And what are the metrics of, you know, being delighted? You know, what will make you see, feel, be able to demonstrate that you have hit it out of the park? So you want to think about that. And then the last piece is simply about timelines. So, you know, will I be doing something immediately? If so, how quickly will I see success? Is there a deadline? But the more specific and clear you can get on what you want to achieve, how you will achieve it, by when, and what success will look like. The better you can do all of that, the more rapidly and more successfully you will get to those outcomes.
Absolutely love that. You know, you got to have a plan, right? And that's essentially what you're all talking about there. Liz, this has been a great show. So I'm just going to wind it down here now. I do have the last couple things for you. And basically one last question for you, I should say. And I ask all my guests this question at the end of the podcast. And as according to you, Liz Bywater, what makes a great leader?
Scott, I would say a great leader is somebody who is a smart, motivated, good human being. And that might sound a little bit corny, but the fact is people work for leaders that inspire them and make them feel positive about the contribution that they're bringing. So if you are leading others, the key is to show them that you've got their back, you care about them, you respect them, and that you're going to give them an opportunity to make a contribution. You pull that off, you're going to be a fantastic leader, and people will follow you wherever you go.
No, that's not corny at all. That's outstanding. Last thing before we wrap up here this evening, feel free, basically it's over to you. Where can people find you? How can they follow you on your journey? Feel free to give yourself a shameless plug, especially for the book. It's all about you right now.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, Scott. Well, there are lots of ways people can stay connected with me. Certainly they can pick up the book. The full title of the book is Slow Down to Speed Up, Lead, Succeed, and Thrive in a 24/7 World. You can pick that up on Amazon. It's in other places as well, but Amazon, you know, everybody knows how to quickly pick something up on Amazon. It's available digitally or in paperback. You can go to my website, which is simply my name, lizbywater.com, and you can get a free download of a sample chapter of the book. You can also get the book directly from there. And there's, you know, lots of podcast interviews and articles and videos and all kinds of things that you can get absolutely for free. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter. Dr. Liz Bywater on Twitter. So many ways that you could get in touch with me. And you can also just reach right out to me. And you can send me an email if you'd like to get in touch directly. And that's simply my name, liz@lizbywater.com.
Awesome. For the audience, as always, it's easy for you folks. Just go to show notes, movingforwardleadership.com/9999. And all the links are there for you. Liz, it's been an awesome episode. Actually, before I even fully wrap up here, for the audience listening, like seriously, it behooves you to go ahead and grab a copy of this book. It is jam-packed with tips, advice, like actionable things. There is very little fluff. She has kept it basically to the goods. And it's a super easy read. Like it's about 100 pages long. It's super small, but it is jam packed. You're not going to find a better value. And I'm saying this on air because I got a copy and I was like, wow, this is nothing but gold. every page from 1 to 100, basically 100. So well done on you and the book, because it's great. So anyway, let's wrap it up now. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for talking about the book. Thanks for writing the book, and so that you can come and talk about the book to me, and most importantly, the audience listened there.
Oh, well, Scott, thank you so much. Listen, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate you having me on, and have a wonderful new year.
Thanks. Yeah. Happy 2020 to everyone. I can't believe this is going out on New Year's Day. It's awesome. All right. That's all I got for you fine folks today. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you enjoyed the interview. And most importantly, I hope you got something out of it. And if you did, remember R squared, S squared, right? Write and review the show so that it gets a little bit noticed a bit more. But most importantly, I can help more people, because that's what I'm here for. That's what my guests are here for, is to help more people become better leaders and not being bosses, right? So remember that. R squared, rate and review. S, share the show. Share this show with someone who you think can relate to the podcast as a whole and today's topic. And then finally, subscribe. Subscribe so that you never miss another episode. And you can do that via your podcast playing app of choice through movingforwardleadership.com/subscribe. That's it for today, ladies and gentlemen. And as always, stop bossing and start leading. Take care now.